Authorities say the incident was a terrorist attack. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi highlights the importance of Muslim unity as he addresses International Islamic Unity Conference in Tehran. And a pro-Russia party, which seeks to end military aid to Ukraine, wins the general elections in NATO member state Slovakia. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. An explosion has struck the Turkish capital, Ankara, wounding two police officers. The Interior Ministry has called the incident a terrorist attack. It said the attack was conducted by two assailants riding in a vehicle close to the ministry. It said one of the attackers blew himself up and the other was, quote, neutralized. The targeted district is home to several other ministries and the Turkish parliament, which was due to reopen today, with an address from President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Local media also reported gunfire in the cordoned-off district, where emergency services were in attendance. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi has called for unity among Muslims, slamming any divisive move in the Muslim world as in line with enemies' objectives. Raisi told the 37th International Islamic Unity Conference in Tehran that Palestine remains the main issue of the Islamic world and a rallying point for Muslims. The president called for support for Palestinians' resistance and took a swipe at attempts to normalize relations with Israel. Raisi said those attempts are being pushed by enemies' puppets. The president noted that the U.S. and Israel are waging a hybrid war on Muslims, also by backing Takfiri crimes and insulting moves against Muslim sanctities. He noted, however, that Muslims must work together and use their major potential to secure their place in the emerging new world order. Israeli warplanes have reportedly attacked targets in the Syrian capital, Damascus. Explosions were heard in Damascus as media released images of Israeli warplanes flying overhead, with Syrian air defense operating to counter the attacks. Details are sketchy at this point, as there have been no official comments yet from Syrian authorities. This comes as the Israeli regime has, on numerous occasions, struck targets in Syria as Tel Aviv pushes ahead with its acts of aggression. Tens of thousands of Israelis are back on the streets for the 39th consecutive week to protest against controversial judicial curbs by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extreme far-right cabinet. Protesters say that they will continue the rallies until they are able to repeal the legislation. Mass protests against the judicial overhaul have been ongoing since it was proposed back in January. The Israeli Supreme Court began hearing the first in a series of appeals linked to the plan in August. It set off an unprecedented domestic crisis, resulting in public unrest, labor strikes, and mutiny by some members of the military. Critics say the curbs remove vital checks on the far-right cabinet's powers. Palestinian resistance factions have organized a rally in the blockaded Gaza Strip, marking the 23rd anniversary of the Al-Aqsa Intifada, also known as the Second Intifada. It was sparked by the desecration of the Islamic Holy Shrine by the then-Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. Ashraf Shannon has more.
Palestinians in Gaza rallied on Saturday to mark the 23rd anniversary of the Second Palestinian Popular Uprising, which is also known as the Al-Aqsa Intifada. The Al-Aqsa Intifada was sparked by the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied Al-Quds in September 2000 by then-Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and his bodyguards. Palestinians have been holding protests in the eastern part of the Gaza Strip for the last 3 weeks, aiming to draw international attention to the continued Israeli human rights violations in Al-Quds. Hamas movement has warned the Israeli regime against violations at Al-Aqsa Mosque.
23 years have passed since the beginning of the Al-Aqsa Intifada, and we continue to fight for our holy places. The Israeli enemy must not provoke the Palestinian people. The equation has not changed, and Palestine remains an Islamic land. Today we assert that we will fight for our rights, and we will use all the forms of resistance, including armed resistance, to liberate Al-Quds and all of our land.
Protesters held placards denouncing the Israeli regime's desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. They also denounced the international and Arab silence on the unabated Israeli crimes in Al-Quds.
Intifada means that there is determination for Palestinians to face the Israeli aggression and colonialization and settlement and achieve Palestinian rights for self-determination and right of return.
In recent weeks, the Israeli forces have increased their presence near the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, taking advantage of Jewish holidays.
The Intifada continues because of the ongoing Israeli aggression against Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. We call on the international community to exert real pressure on the occupying Israeli regime to stop its grave violations against the Palestinian people.
Observers say the Israeli regime and its regional and international backers are responsible for the escalation of violence in Al-Quds.
23 years on, Palestinians say they are determined to free Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, no matter what sacrifices are required. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The fifth edition of Mustafa Prize ceremony is underway in the central Iranian city of Isfahan. More than 100 Muslim scholars from various countries are participating in this year's events. The prize is a prestigious award in the realm of science and technology, dedicated to recognizing and promoting the achievements of top researchers and scientists.
Iran is hosting the fifth edition of the Mustafa Prize ceremony. The prestigious scientific event kicked off in the cultural capital of the Islamic world, Isfahan. High-profile scientists from 57 Islamic countries as well as Iranian officials are taking part in the opening ceremony on September 29th.
The fifth edition of the Mustafa Prize, which is often referred to as the Muslim Nobel, has begun in the central city of Isfahan in Iran and will continue until October 4th. Over 100 scientists and researchers from all around the world have gathered here today.
Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi officially inaugurated the fifth edition of the prestigious scientific award. Addressing the attendees, he noted that the difference between the Mustafa Award ceremony and other similar events is in its view of science.
The Mustafa Prize is awarded to the knowledge that has the two wings of science and faith, a science that has authenticity and seeks to create happiness and welfare of humanity and the new Islamic civilization.
Raisi also said the Mustafa Scientific Award has a great mission and therefore it should be recognized as a creative movement. The president added efforts should be made to further develop it. The Mustafa Prize is a top science and technology award granted to top researchers and scientists in the Islamic world. Adorned with the name of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and due to the Holy Prophet's emphasis on learning and understanding science, the prize was dubbed Mustafa, which means the chosen one. Mustafa Prize was established in 2012 as one of the symbols of scientific excellence and has been held biennially since 2015, recognizing leading researchers and scientists of the Islamic world.
I'm honored that I am participating in such an excellent and high-level event of Mustafa Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam Foundation. I think the foundation is doing a great job. It serves a window of the science in the Islamic country to the world. It proved that there are great minds in the Islamic world that deserve to be recognized and to be supported.
And what's really happening here is one is, of course, the award giving, which recognizes very well accomplished scientists. And this is an encouragement for other scientists to do excellent work, especially in the Muslim world, because we all know that there's so much of good technology innovation happening in the Muslim world.
The prize is awarded in the four categories of information and communication science and technology, life and medical science and technology, nanoscience and nanotechnology, and all other areas of science and technology. This award is not limited to only Muslim researchers and scientists. It also acknowledges non-Muslim scientists residing in Muslim countries. The Mustafa Prize serves as a beacon of inspiration for Muslim scientists across the globe. The Mustafa Prize is not merely an award. It is a celebration of the scientific spirit and a call to action for Muslim scientists to continue their pursuit of knowledge for the betterment of the mankind. Mahdi Abbasian, Isfahan.
Well, let's bring in Mahdi Abbasian to find out what is happening there in Isfahan. Well, Mahdi, at this point, you've been there a couple of days. Tell us what you have for us.
Well, Kaveh, as the Mustafa Prize begun here in the cultural capital of the Islamic world, the beautiful city of Isfahan, the next events, the side events that happened here, one of them, the most important one, was the STEP, the ninth edition of the Science and Technology Exchange Program, a platform for connecting scholars, scientists, researchers from the Islamic world in order to create a sort of synergy so that they can have better cooperation to realize their goals. Now, today and yesterday and today, different discussion panels were held across Isfahan to discuss different topics. Right now, I'm in the Isfahan's Medical Sciences University, in which three or four different panels are being held. One of them, one of the most important ones, is precision medicine, with the attendance of Iranian researchers, scientists, as well as some top Muslim scientists and researchers who've been invited to this great event. And now I'm joined by a guest, Mr. Walid Al-Hirs, who is a keynote speaker of the precision and precision medicine panel. Mr. Walid, please tell us about yourself, introduce yourself, and tell us your area of expertise.
Okay, my name is Walid Al-Hirs. I'm an associate professor of allergy and clinical immunology in Kuwait University. Mm-hmm. My main interest is the understanding of allergic and immunological diseases, mm-hmm, from epidemiologic, genetic, and pathophysiologic aspects.
Great. Mr. Bailey, tell us about the today's event, the STEP. What is it, and what do you think about it?
Okay, so let me start by mentioning that I received the very kind invitation by the Mustafa Foundation to participate in the ninth STEP activity, as well as the awards ceremony for the Mustafa Prize. I was amazed by the level of hospitality and the organization of all activities that are being part of this conference. Today was one part of the whole conference that focused on precision medicine in a number of diseases, among them malignancies, allergic and immunological diseases. Basically, it showed the benefit of, instead of grouping all patients with a specific disease and treat them all similarly, which may result into either poor benefits or no benefits, or sometimes even side effects of medication. So the idea is, to reach the better prognosis, better outcome for the group of patients with the same disease, that we should divide them into subgroups based on their disease manifestation and some of the laboratory tests that we do them. Based on that, we divide them into smaller groups, and each group is given a specific medicine different than the other groups. Then we look at the better outcome of the whole group. Such approach that has started 10, 15 years ago has resulted into significant improvement in the outcome of the patient, better quality of life, and less side effects. However, there are still some concerns, like long-term outcome, cost of such medicine, whether it helps all patients or not. Mm-hmm. So we still need to work on the direction to understand and answer these questions.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, that was Mr. Walid Al-Hirs from Kuwait. Now, today is the second day of the STEP, the Science and Technology Exchange Program. This event started yesterday. It will continue tomorrow, which is the final day of STEP, and also tomorrow will be the closing ceremony of the Mustafa
award, Kaveh.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Mahdi Abbasian there at the venue in Isfahan. Thank you. Moving on, Britain's government says it wants to deploy military instructors to Ukraine. The British Defense Minister, Grant Shapps, says the opportunity has risen following a discussion with British military chiefs on Friday. He says the west of Ukraine has a better condition for such an opportunity in particular. This comes as the Ukrainian armed forces are receiving training in Britain and other Western countries. Britain has provided 5-week military training courses to around 20,000 Ukrainians over the past year. London says the British defense companies have plans to set up arms factories in Ukraine as well. Pro-Russia party wins general elections in NATO member state Slovakia. With almost all the votes counted, leftist Smer SD party, led by the former premier Robert Fico, obtained over 23% of the votes. That left the party's main rival, the centrist Progressive Slovakia, in second place on 17% of the votes. Robert Fico's party now needs to enter a coalition to form a government. Fico seeks to end military aid to Ukraine, wants better relations with Russia, and is critical of the European Union and NATO. He has pledged not to send a single round of ammunition to Ukraine from Slovakia, which has been one of Europe's biggest donors to Kiev as a share of its GDP. On to France, where the government continues to enforce controversial budget cuts via executive decree, and even as the West's economic woes continue to rage. People took to the streets around the country, demanding action on a long-running housing crisis, which has reached new proportions amid record inflation. Ramin Mazari has more from Paris.
In the past few presidential elections, the number one voter demand has been to address housing issues, which are suffered by one out of every four people in France. Many consider the European refugee crisis to be in its eighth year, adding to the national housing policy failure. The failure of Western sanctions on Russia has helped rent to explode over the last year by over 7%, or an entire monthly payment. Major demonstrations were held across the country to demand the government finally take action for adequate and stable shelter. Demonstrators demanded rent freezes and reductions, the taxing of real estate corporations and multiple homeowners, and the requisitioning of a record 3.2 million empty lodgings. However, historically, there have been few signs that the administration of Emmanuel Macron is interested in dialogue. The 2024 budget has just been released, but don't expect to see it debated in Parliament. President Macron has just used his usual executive decree to force through yet another austerity budget with billions in cuts to government services, despite the record economic hardship. Many say that housing is actually an issue which any committed government can fix in just a few years. By making laws which favor tenants and not rich landlords, by putting more taxes into building public housing, and by creating more shelters for those with emergency needs. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, October 1st, 2023. I'm Atefa Irfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is broadcast on Sunday. It's a program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the most. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. Today is October 1st, 2023, and this is another edition of Listeners Special. And as usual, we've received reception reports from around the world, including from Mukarram Hussein from Bangladesh, from P.S. Sekar from India, and from Juan Coba from Spain. So, Mukarram, P.S. Sekar, and Juan, thank you for your kindness. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And let's see who has sent us email from around the world. Yes, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. Here we've received an email from Hitoshi Sugio from Japan. Also, Andre Pagam from Portugal has sent us a piece of email. Andre, I wish I'm right in pronouncing your name. Anyway, I do apologize if I mispronounce your name. And the last but not the least is an email from Harald Seuss from Austria, who is one of our old and regular listeners. After a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. And here we start with an email from Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh. Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar says, "Hello, dear IRIB English Radio. At first, take my salam from Bangladesh. I learned from Radio Tehran English service that the speech made by the President of Iran, Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, condemning and protesting the desecration of the Holy Quran in Europe and America in this year's session of the United Nations General Assembly, has created a stir in the whole world. It is also appreciated in Muslim countries. There is a flood of likes and positive comments about this news on social media. Honorable President of Iran, Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi, holding the Quran at the United Nations, standing on the international stage, the speech given by the Iranian president with the Holy Quran in his hands has naturally been published in almost all the media of the world. The European and American media, including the United Nations website, could not avoid publishing it through this, it has been possible to convey the position and a statement of the Muslim world against insulting the Quran to the Muslim society. This bold speech of the Iranian president at the World Forum will make an important contribution to lighten up the people in the world and awaken humanity in Muslim society. Muslim haters can no longer show the audacity to burn the holy book of Quran. All Muslim leaders must stand tall for the Quran in the world court. I applaud the timely speech of the Iranian president at the UN General Assembly. I am ending today with the hope that Allah will grant understanding and guidance to the enemies of Quran. Well, first of all, salam and warm greetings to you. Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, our old-time and regular listener. You, first of all, thank you for this email. It was detailed and it was thoughtful. You mentioned really good points about the recent speech of the Iranian president, Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi, the 78th meeting of the UN General Assembly. It seems that you've listened to President Raisi's speech carefully, and as you mentioned, this bold action of President Raisi actually will make an important contribution to lighten up the people in the world and awaken humanity in the Muslim society. Well, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, again, thank you for this email. Please write to us soon and tell us more and more about the world developments, about your views, about IRIB English Radio broadcast, and anything you like. But this was great, and it really made my day. Thank you. And my colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL as confirmation to this email. Welcome back. From Japan, we've received an email from Hitoshi Sugio. Hitoshi says, "Dear staff, my name is Hitoshi Sugio. I am 51 years old and I work in municipality here in Hyogo, Japan. I've received your program and I would like to give you a report. I request you to send me your verification card or letter to my address in Japan or by email. Thank you in advance." Salam and warm greetings to you, Hitoshi Sugio from Japan, and appreciations to you for this email. Of course, an EQSL or electronic QSL will soon be sent to you as verification to this email. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Hitoshi Sugio from Japan. And from Portugal, we've received an email from Andre Pagam. Andre says, "Hello, my name is Andre Pagam from Portugal. I'm starting to listen to the radio. I was trying to listen to something and I came across to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The reception was very good and the news program was clean and completely understandable. As this is my first contact, I would like to request a QSL card if it is possible to be sent to me by post. Yours sincerely." First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Andre Pagam from Portugal. And this greeting comes from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and from IRIB English Radio staff for you. Thank you very much for this email. So it seems that you've already joined the world of IRIB English Radio. And this is your first contact with IRIB English Radio. We welcome any view or outlook about our radio broadcast and the quality of our program. And we are so happy that you mentioned that you found the reception very good and the news program clean and completely understandable. It's good to hear that. So tell us which program or programs you like the best, Andrea. Anyway, please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio regularly and be our old and regular listener. And each USL or electronic USL will soon be sent to you as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. This is Listeners Special, and here we have an email from Austria from Harald Seuss, our old and regular listener. Harald Seuss says, "Dear staff of the English service of Parse Today or IRIB English Radio, I've listened to your radio. I will ask you if you can verify my report by QSL card or EQSL. I send you best greetings to you and your nice country and hope to get an answer from you. Best regards from Austria." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Harald Seuss from Austria. And please accept our warm appreciations and gratitudes to you for this email. Please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL as confirmation to this email. Harald Seuss, we wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And here we come to the end of our today's program. But before saying goodbye, I wanted to send my warm appreciations and gratitudes to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Juan Koba from Spain, P.S. Sakar from India, Makaram Hussein from Bangladesh, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, Hitoshi Sugio from Japan, Andre Pagam from Portugal, and Harald Seuss from Austria. And of course, many of our listeners, which their emails and letters, because of the lack of time, we couldn't read their emails and letters in this edition, but later on, we will read their messages. So please keep in touch with IRIB English Radio and your favorite program, Listeners Special. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parsetoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Bye. Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Despite questioning economic sanctions from the West, the Islamic Republic has succeeded in developing its aerospace capabilities. Iran has put a third homegrown satellite into orbit, and that's a big deal because sanctions have failed to stop Iran's advancement technologically, especially in the aerospace sector, not to mention many other sectors like the military. Why has Iran been so successful in these advancements? Why has the U.S. maximum pressure campaign failed to stop Iran despite decades of sanctions? Just some of the questions we'll be asking in this edition of The Spotlight. Our guests for this program are Julie Ghassem joins us. She's a journalist and political analyst. Also joining us is Shabir Rizvi, political commentator.
Is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Julie, I'll first start with you. So we're looking at what's called the NUR-3, and I'm looking at the description. An imaging satellite gone into orbit successfully, placed into a 450-kilometer orbit of the Earth with the Iranian Kassett satellite carrier, which means messenger. And this comes a year and a half after the NUR-2 went into orbit. That altitude was 500 kilometers. And then you also had the NUR-1 back in April 20. Which was the first military reconnaissance satellite launched by Iran. Tell us why this is significant.
Well, the speed of the progress from NUR-1 to NUR-3, which is the most final and most successful edition of the spy satellite, is definitely a feat in itself. The U.S. Played down the NUR-1 a lot, and that was just only 3 years ago. And right now it's a fully capable imaging satellite that's able to really have a full range of capturing all of the U.S.'s spy activities and bases in the illegally put bases in the region, which is what has which is really putting the U.S. on its toes. It's effectively knocked down the Mossad and the U.S.'s monopoly on intelligence and on espionage and imaging, basically, in the region. Now Iran is emerging as a Western agent, a power that's having a homegrown capability over intelligence and over satellite imagery. And, you know, Iran was already really beating off the U.S.'s bases in Iraq and around the region before the satellite. What can this be capable, what can the threats to the U.S. occupation in the region, Mossad presence in the region, reach now that that the NUR-3 is successful? This is really worrying the U.S. occupation and Israel for sure. So much that the U.S. once again it's launching its military nuclear capability pretext you know, giving as its opposition to the newer three. But of course, that's just a pretext to basically hide the level of anxiety that the U.S. occupation and its allies have in losing its monopoly on intelligence gathering and technology in the region.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, if we want to take a look at this, Shabir, in terms of what the accomplishment really entails, this technology of satellite carriers is only available to 12 countries. In fact, there are, even though there are countries that produce satellites, but because of this technology of the launcher itself, they don't have the full cycle of space technology. Tell us, of course, what your thoughts are on that. But when our guest there from Beirut says the U.S. monopoly, I think the U.S. wants to monopolize industries like the aerospace, but probably their real interest is the military industry, so that these countries in West Asia, as referred to by us, become reliant on the U.S. when it comes to things like military equipment. Is that a correct perspective on it or way of looking at it?
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you for having me. And yes, I believe that's a correct kind of perspective of having it. I mean, if you look at how the United States has handled pretty much any single technology, it can. It looks to monopolize the technology or the field. It looks to dominate it, and it looks to push other people out of the way and have complete control over it. Now, what Iran has done, as you mentioned, with, you know, 11 other countries, Iran being now, you know, the 12th, is it can stand on its own two feet and say, yes, we can do this. That presents a very unique threat to the United States. As you know, the United States has always been trying to put its claws into the region. And now that it has, you know, a significant resistance, not only in the form of, you know, resistance on the ground, but now quite literally resistance in the sky, Iran has effectively leveled the playing field here. And this is a concrete step that Iran is taking into kind of ensuring that the region itself is not reliant on the United States or the West in its entirety, because, you know, Iran is always willing to, you know, look out for its neighbors, be a real key regional player. And unlike the United States, which looks to kind of monopolize and exert control over it, as we see here with Iran joining, for example, BRICS and the Shanghai Cooperation Council, Iran is really looking for, you know, trade and trust based on mutual growth, mutual trust, mutual respect between two nations. And so what this presents as a challenge to the United States is that Iran can now partner up with these different nations, these different states that are looking to, you know, increase their capacity for production, not rely so much on the United States, and also establish a key economic relationship that isn't predatory, that isn't linked to the IMF, that isn't linked to the World Bank, but rather based off mutual trust and cooperation with Iran and its allied states.
Yeah, and since you're in Beirut there, Julie, in terms of the way that the U.S. has prevented or tried to prevent for example, transfer of Iranian oil to Lebanon, what's wrong with Iran transferring its aerospace technology to Lebanon or its missile technology? I think maybe the U.S. then is very concerned about that because obviously one of the things that stands out in this region is the Israeli regime. And I think that's probably one of the driving factors that the U.S. has when it comes to preventing Iran from advancing. Is that right?
Yeah, by preventing Iran from advancing, you're preventing the whole region from advancing. You know, aside from the fact that we have limited capabilities in Lebanon, limited military capacity on itself as a small country, our country, Lebanon, has been structurally dependent on the West economically and on the U.S. militarily. And this is done specifically to ensure that there is no independence that's really reached on a military level, but also so that we're always receiving the end of old stockpiles, terrible grade equipment to keep the country militarily subservient, but also within the bounds and control of the West, so that whatever we have is also ensures that there is that constant dependency. Now, what Iran does in bringing over military technology and oil goods is it breaks that dependency, and it ensures that there is actually some self-sufficiency and some level of sovereignty with Iranian allies in the region that can effectively challenge the comprador dependent status that countries like Lebanon have been in for decades.
President Ebrahim Raisi, Shabir has thanked the aerospace for doing what it did, this major achievement. I'd like to get your thoughts, however, on how he has said once again this has shown that threats and sanctions have no effect on the determination of our dear young scientists for the progress and excellence of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iran's leader has time and again said that the West's main worry, in particular the U.S., and what they're targeting is these mines, the minds of the youth in particular, and scientists, for example, and how they are the ones that are progressing and advancing Iran with it, and that's what they're targeting. We can talk about the scientists in another question, but just how what you think and whether you agree with what Iran's leader has said in terms of these young minds being targeted, and of course, in this case, in point in the aerospace industry.
Yeah, of course. No, I agree completely. I mean, I think it's very important to kind of assess exactly what he means by targeting, right? Because the West has several different tactics it deploys in order to ensure that progress is stifled. One, of course, is the very obvious, you know, threat of actually murdering, right? As we've seen time and time again in the past, you know, whether it's the CIA or Mossad flat out assassinating nuclear scientists, the West isn't afraid to not only conduct such horrific acts of cowardice, I would say, but also it flaunts it. It says very openly that, yes, we were responsible, or yes, that we killed XYZ scientists in order to stop progress, in order to, for example, fear-monger the U.S. public into saying these scientists were developing weapons of mass destruction, they were developing nuclear weapons. And then I think there's also the process of using sanctions to target them as well, right? If you lock them out of having a good financial life, if you draw them into the West itself by promising them, oh, you'll get, you know, XYZ, you know, degree, we'll be able to give you a nice paying job. That's a process that we refer to as brain drain, where you are taking the best that that a country has to offer, pulling them out of the country, stifling the country's progress, and then integrating them into the West. And in the West, as we were talking about just a few moments ago, the West is laser focused on creating weapons of murder. They pour billions and billions and billions of dollars, as we see, into their war machines and into wars such as the Ukraine war, for example, where we have a looming government shutdown happening right now. But the government has essentially said that we'll keep pouring money into weapons of war for Ukraine. And so, again, all this to say that those threats are very real. The United States is constantly looking to sink its teeth into these scientists, into these young minds, and try to either pull them out of the country if they can and have them work for the United States, for example, or just flat out kill them if they can't.
Yeah, the fact that Iranian nuclear scientists have been targeted, Julie, I'm sure is not new news for you. We know how Mossad has operated in that regards, and we know how they have assassinated a number of Iranian scientists in the nuclear field in particular. Now, we know that Iran is not after nuclear weapons. Iran, even not only Israel's intel agencies, but also the U.S., have confirmed that Iran is not after weaponization of its nuclear program. But yet, Israel has targeted Iranian scientists. What are they afraid of? Why do they want to get rid of Iranian scientists?
Well, this was even back in Khomeini's time, he wrote about this. He wrote about how Israel is afraid, the Zionists are afraid, the West is afraid of an intellectual society, an intellectual society that works for sovereignty, and an intellectual society that can build the capability for economic sovereignty too. As it's, you know, known, as it's been proven from years and years worth of international investigations into Iran's nuclear program, that it's a program of building alternative energy. It's a peaceful nuclear program where Iran can develop like a variety, a diverse array of energy capabilities that could be the foundation for, its future sovereign scientific development and programs. But again, like the development that leads to political as well as economic sovereignty is angers the U.S. and the West more than a military challenge. And that is why scientists are the target. That's why youth are the target through soft power. That's why in the latest PSYOP, it focused a lot, like all of the PSYOPs from the West do, they focus on undermining Iran's cultural and social values, especially targeting youth, targeting women, because Iran's social values as a country are the foundation for its development and for encouraging development as a major scientific player today.
Also, Iran's missile program has been obviously a subject that is not sitting well with the U.S. and Israel in turn, Shabir. We know that that has been a thorn on the side of the U.S. for quite some time and still is. I'm trying to understand how it is that the U.S., which was involved in the Iran-Iraq war in terms of providing weapons along with other Western countries where missiles and bombs were raining down on Iran, can expect this country not to have its own missile program. They blame Iran for weaponizing its missile program to carry nuclear warheads. We just had the other day the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, placed a nuclear threat on an international stage by the name of the UNGA at the podium to the entire world, saying there should be a nuclear threat against Iran. Shouldn't Iran be equipped then with missiles, non-nuclear missiles?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, everything the West says about, you know, a country shouldn't arm itself, a country shouldn't have these defensive capabilities is pure hypocrisy, because the moment that, you know, a country would let its guard down, the West is going to take whatever or create whatever boogeyman it can in order to invade it, right? For example, the example I think of almost immediately is Gaddafi's Libya, where Gaddafi kind of put down his arms, and then immediately we saw a NATO-backed invasion that overthrew Gaddafi, and now Libya is a slave state that's suffering from infrastructure collapse. And so I think the threat of nuclear war against Iran from Netanyahu is one, cowardice. It's two, it's fear-mongering, right? We all know that Israel is in a very desperate situation right now. It's entering almost its 40th straight week of internal protests. The Netanyahu government is not very popular at all. In fact, on the global stage, no matter which government it is that's running the occupation. The occupation itself is losing any credibility it had, and it already had very little credibility to start off with. And so all this to say, I think Iran should 100% have the defensive capabilities it thinks it needs in order to protect itself. Because the moment I believe that, you know, a country lets its guard down, especially against the West will always look into penetrating other countries, into sowing chaos, into ensuring that the Western influence is the dominant influence in the region. And we see this now more than ever, as the West is willing to actually engage in not only war against Russia, but slowly creeping towards war against China. It's completely willing to fight a multi-front war. And if countries think for one second that the West would hesitate to take advantage of a situation where its guard is down, they would be in for a rude awakening, because the West would 100% exploit any situation it can in order to take over and control any other region it possibly can.
Well, Iran has not actually swayed from its missile program or limited in any shape or form. Actually, has advanced it to the point where it is now, from what I'm reading over here, to have the largest missile stockpile in West Asia. and it's the only country to have one that has a range of 2,000 kilometers, which obviously reaches Israel. Julie, my question to you is, there was a case where you had the martyred general, Lieutenant General Haj Qasem Soleimani, that was assassinated by the U.S., and Iran retaliated. And it retaliated by using the Fateh 110 family of solid fuel missiles to the U.S. base, the Ain al-Assad base, to show not only its strength, but to give U.S. a little rattling of the cage. There could be other instances where Iran needs to be equipped, and therefore it needs these types of weapons for its defensive posture. Aside from Israel threatening Iran time and again, you also have the U.S. that has that famous saying, "Options, all options are on the table." So Iran has obviously a reason to have these missiles, correct?
Absolutely. Justification and reason. But, did you want to say something?
No, no, I thought you had ended your sentence. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm just going to continue on the answer. So it has justification, it has reason, it has historical precedent. Any country in Iran's position or in any country in West Asia's position not only has the right to develop itself, but any other option is suicide for it, especially put up against how Iran is probably one of the most targeted countries by the U.S. In the world. After the assassination of Haj Qasem Soleimani, this was to send, Iran was sending a message that not only should you really think about continuing to attack Iran in such cowardly ways, but also all options are on the table regionally, just across the region. Just last week, just a couple days ago, not even last week, Yemen was celebrating its anniversary of its revolution, where it's transformed into a sovereign resistance government and administration from its Comprador government in 2014. They held a military parade, also showcasing very advanced weaponry that nobody would have thought just a dozen years ago. That Yemen would be in possession of such advanced missiles and weapons. The same is across the board with Iran's allies in the region. Iran's strength and justification for defending itself, it goes to all of its allies and all of its countries in the position of being in the crosshairs of occupation and imperialist assault. We can, expect that capability to grow across the board. Israel already knows it can't challenge Lebanon militarily. And a lot of U.S. allies in the region that have gone for years head-to-head with resistance access countries are finding that out, that their capability and their morale is being diminished day after day. Iran is clearly sizing up in this equation, and it's all due to the will of breaking the sanctions that have been put on it since its revolution in 1979. And I think those sanctions have, as Khamenei has said many times, facilitated the opportunity to develop a truly sovereign defense program that our region should look to as a model.
Final question, based on follow-up on what just Julie said there, Shabir, why does the U.S. continue down a failed road of maximum pressure campaign? It can't suppress Iran's technological advancements and advancements in many other fields. Why doesn't it try to engage? Nobody says they're going to call each other and wish each other Merry Christmas or Happy Nowruz. Nobody wants that. But at the same time, engagement, if they were to have done that, maybe the world wouldn't be where it's at now, where Iran, Saudi Arabia, the region itself is united. There's BRICS, there's SCO that Iran is part of. And their lack of engagement has actually, and maximum pressure campaign, shot themselves in the foot. Why does the U.S. continue down this path? In under a minute, please.
Yeah, in under a minute. Okay, that's a lot. that I'm going to try to crush in here. But essentially, the ideological position of the United States is full hegemony over the world. It likes its unipolar world, and it's willing to fight for it. It's willing to fight dirty for it, as we've seen with assassinations, with maximum pressure campaigns, with pulling out of the JCPOA. And now as we're emerging into this new multipolar world that's, you know, multilateral and power spheres, the United States is not going to want to engage. It knows that if it goes down this route, it will lose all influence in the regions it currently has control over.